So the first paragraph does not give you any conclusive proposition because it's a historical argument. Historical argument only gives you probabilities. But there is in this very paragraph one ontological argument which is conclusive. Ontological argument is always conclusive. And that argument is also present, although very slightly given, but it is very important. And for philosophy it is very important. You will see here one statement, a very short statement, is also the highest that thought can envisage. This phrase is very important. Is also the highest which the thought can envisage. That which thought can envisage is not historical. Whether in the past or the present or the future, thought is thought. Whatever it can think at the highest is always the highest. Whether it was thought at that time or today or tomorrow. The nature of water will remain what water is, always, liquid flow. Therefore, if you make a statement as to what thought can think highest, it's conclusive. What highest, what is thought? You take what is thought, it's a fact of thought. What is the nature of thought? And if you analyze the nature of thought as a fact, you will find that the nature of thought is definable in terms of an ontological argument. In the history of thought, ontological argument is quite well known to philosophers. What is an ontological argument? Ontology means reality. That's the meaning of ontology. Study of ultimate reality is ontology. Now, ontological argument is the argument of thought regarding ultimate reality. An argument which is conclusive. So the argument of the nature of thought, starting from the nature of thought, regarding ultimate reality, which is unquestionable, is ontological argument. The ontological argument simply states very easily, only this much. Thought cannot but think of reality as spaceless and timeless. This is all that the argument says. Thought cannot but, this is the important point, thought cannot but think of ultimate reality as spaceless and timeless. This is all the ontological argument. In the history of Western philosophy, one of the first persons to formulate it was Parmenides. Parmenides, in the Greek thought, he formulated this argument, which is present in Plato, and which became revived in Anselm, another great philosopher, and became refined in Descartes, Spinoza, Leibniz. It is even today being questioned, because the argument is so powerful that even if people try to doubt it, and many people think they have doubted now successfully, and yet there are people who say, not at all, this argument is irrefutable, you cannot question it. You come right up to Sri Aurobindo and he asserts the ontological argument. And that is stated in this very first chapter, very first paragraph, is also the highest that thought can envisage. What is the highest that you can think of? God, spaceless and timeless reality. And is also the highest aspiration of man. The highest preoccupation of man is also the highest that his thought can envisage. It is an identity of the two. Man is aspiring for God, is also something that is rationally the most justifying thing. This aspiration of man for God is not irrational. It's the highest that thought can envisage. Now, Sri Aurobindo's crystallization, that if you read the whole history of mankind, the one fact which emerges is that there is an aspiration for God, life, freedom, immortality. And it is that aspiration which is philosophically, ontologically, from the highest point of view of thought, is fully justified. This is the starting point of the very, like a, you know, when you go to a temple, you have a big bell and massive bell, and you have first striking of a dong. And if you make a big dong, all the vibrations or reverberations that come out, they go on and on and on and on in your entire movement of the temple, all through your journey. Similarly, this paragraph is a dong of a big bell in the temple of God. This argument that the whole aspiration of man, which you can't rub out at all, whatever you may do, it comes again and again after every banishment, is the aspiration for God. And it is that aspiration which is fully certified by ontological argument, which cannot be questioned by thought at least. Rationally it cannot be questioned. You can question on many other grounds, but rationally you can never question it. So you might say that the very first paragraph of the Life Divine gives before us in a massive manner the quintessence of the aspiration of man. The whole history, the massive history of mankind is summarized in 3-4 terms: God, light, freedom, immortality. And it says that rationally speaking, and this rational thinking is not only what Sri Aurobindo states here, it is the whole history of thought. If you examine from primaries to the present day, if there is one important argument, it is ontological argument. You may agree with it, you may not agree with it, it doesn't matter. But nobody can historically deny the fact that the one greatest philosophical argument that history has manifested in regard to philosophy is the ontological argument. And according to that argument at least, God is the highest that can be envisaged, unquestionably. This is the basic statement in the very first paragraph. Now you can read again. And you'll find the statement much more meaningful than what we had started with. It states, the earliest preoccupation of man in his awakened thoughts and as it seems, I told you to mark the word seems, a historical argument is not conclusive argument, as it seems. His inevitable and ultimate preoccupation. And then he says, why does it seem to be so? Because he gives the example. For it survives the longest periods of skepticism and returns after every banishment. Because of this reason, this is the argument. Therefore it seems is ultimate. But then comes the word is, not seems, but is. Is also the highest which his thought can envisage. It's an ontological argument. So this very statement contains two arguments, a historical argument and an ontological argument. As I said, a philosophical statement should be relating of one fact with the other fact by a process of reasoning, and this form of reasoning can be varied. One of them is a historical argument, another is ontological argument. There are many others which we shall come to later on, but at least in this paragraph you can see clearly the linking of facts by means of historical argument and by means of ontological argument. Now the rest of the paragraph is simply a refinement, a further explication of that aspiration. What is that aspiration? What is it that was earliest? What is it that ultimately remains? What is it that survives after every banishment? This is what Sri Aurobindo now clarifies. It manifests, that aspiration manifests itself in the divination of Godhead. Divination of Godhead. That is to say, there is a deep conjecture. Divination is a conjecture of a special kind. When you divine a thing, it's an English word which actually is both a conjecture and a conjecture which says what it conjectures. Is when I say I divine a thing means I divine God. I conjecture God. God must be divine, must be conjectured. Human being without knowing at all, there is one conjecture of man without knowing anything. Whenever he blindly he turns around and he feels God is there around me. It's a divination of Godhead. It is like a child who knows there is a breast which can feed it. It is divination of the child. It cannot, but it conjectures, it doesn't know, it conjectures, a divination. There is a source of nourishment for the child. Man also is a child, and he needs nourishment. All of us need nourishment. We are all as it were on the earth in search of nourishment. And whether we like it or not, believe it or not, we are sure that there is nourishment. there is God all around us. It's a divination of Godhead. So, this aspiration of man, because there is this divination, he wants it. And he aspires for it. And he wants to embrace it. He wants to be nourished by it. So, it's a divination of Godhead, the impulse towards perfection. This is another line. All human striving is a striving for perfection. Human striving is never satisfied. You do whatever you like. After the airplane, what more do you want to have in this world? Still further. Travel to moon, to Jupiter, to Saturn. Even that may not be satisfying. To go into galaxies after galaxies. Even that may not satisfy. We don't even know what more man will strive at. But this is what, there is an impulse towards perfection. The search after pure truth. In the very grain of thought, this is inherent to eliminate error and to affirm truth in the very grain of thought. All thought movement is nothing but eliminate error and to establish the truth. It's a constant effort of man. All progression is progression towards truth by elimination of error. So this search after pure truth and unmixed bliss. Of course, today people know very well that happiness is the ultimate justification of life. But this word unmixed bliss is very important. Not happiness only, but unmixed bliss. In fact, that is all that human beings ultimately want. The one thing that will satisfy, nothing more. You will have nothing more if that unmixed bliss is obtained. Mere happiness is ephemeral, disappears after some time. Therefore, even that is not satisfying ultimate goal. What it seeks after is unmixed bliss. The sense of a secret immortality. I am immortal. There's a very beautiful sentence of Danton. You know, Danton was a great, the greatest leader of French Revolution. He was the great soul of French Revolution, who raised the masses of people to liberate France from the tyranny of monarchy. In the turn of evolution, as he says, revolution tends to devour its own children. So, Danton was also accused of treason. This very man who was the leader of revolution. Robespierre comes to accuse him, his own master, his own inspirer. And circumstances of history were such that he was required to put Danton in the prison and the court of law. And he was charged that he has committed treason, acted against the very highest interests of the nation. It is he who liberated France. But such was the irony of history, he was put before the court. And it was known that if it is proved that he had committed treason, the only punishment was guillotine, to kill him. Death was the only punishment. So one of the arguments of Danton, when he is asked to defend him, he says, you strive that I should be guillotined, but you don't know, je suis immortel. You don't know I am immortal. You see the cry of the individual, the real aspiration of man. You try to destroy me, I am indestructible. Je suis immortel, I am immortal. And this secret sense of immortality is vibrating in all of us. Whether you like it or not, you want to affirm it or not, you want to question it, it doesn't matter. Your aspiration, you being you, you cannot but seek immortality.